Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, 2026. I believe Scott Ritter is with us now. Scott, it's a pleasure. Before I ask you to explain how in the world the U.S. is running out of ammo and oil, a couple of big picture questions, one of which occurred to me early this morning. Why does the U.S. keep losing wars?
Well, war is an extension of politics by other means. That's a basic, you know, truism that is derived from Clausewitz. So, you know, most military professionals understand that the wars aren't won on the battlefield. Wars are won, you know, in the halls of diplomacy where people negotiate the terms of conflict termination. This is, you know, America tends to lose wars not because our military is defeated, you know, physically by an enemy, but because the government went to war without adequately explaining the purpose of the conflict. The purpose of the conflict lacked the kind of justification that could be sustainable over time. Generally, what happens, the American people just get tired of it. Vietnam, we got tired of it. You know, Iraq, we got tired of it. Afghanistan, we got tired. Taliban didn't beat us. The Iraqi insurgents didn't beat us. The North Vietnamese didn't beat us. We beat ourselves. This war, however, is different. We got beat, hands down, got beat by the Iranians. They defeated us on the field of battle. It's not as though the American people got exhausted and begged the government to leave. The American people still don't even know what the heck's happening. They don't understand what's going on. How did we lose? We were told we have this $1 trillion military, and suddenly we don't have any resources. What's going on? The Iranians thought this through. They have some of the most professional military minds imaginable, better than we are, because they prepared for this war better than we did. They have great technology, and they had a strategy that was not only achievable militarily, but was backed by the people of Iran. The people of Iran are 100% behind the Iranian government in the pursuit of this conflict. The people of America have no clue what's happening.
Well, the people from America keep getting messages like this from the president, which are divorced from reality. Chris, cut number one.
Well, it's open now. We're taking a lot of shit. It's open now. Look, the only one that has control of the Strait of Hormuz right now is the United States Navy. We have a blockade that's been infallible. It's a steel wall. And we let people in that we want to let in, and those people come in, and they've been coming in, and they're going out. So it's actually open now. We do not let them go into Iran. They're not admitted into the Strait to go to Iran.
Not a shrink. But do you think he honestly believes this?
Well, this is, what this is it's quibbling. It's a lie casted as truth. We have a blockade. I mean, he's declared it. It's there. It's not the wall of steel that he claims. We interdict a ship here, a ship there. But, you know, the Iranian ships are actually, you know, running the blockade just by skirting the coast. We can't get our Navy. The wall of steel stops midway through the Gulf of Aden because we can't get the wall of steel up to the Iranian coast because they have missiles that will blow us out of the water. So, what he's saying is because we have this blockade, whatever happens to Strait of Hormuz is irrelevant because anything that comes out of the Strait of Hormuz runs into the wall of steel, and anything going into the Strait of Hormuz has to come through the wall of steel. So we, in effect, control the Strait of Hormuz is what he's saying. It's a, you know, figurative use of words. It's the kind of trickery that lawyers often play. But it has nothing to do with reality. The reality is Iran is 100% in control of the Strait of Hormuz.
I mean, is this an example of how the United States has lost the world's trust? Is it Donald Trump?
This is an example of how government has lost the trust of everybody, and Donald Trump especially. You know, the American people, I think, have grown accustomed to the concept of when a politician's lips move, that means they're lying. And the world has, too. As you know, Prime Minister Carney of Canada said at Davos this past winter, you know, the World Economic Forum, you know, the United States has been promoting something called the rules-based international order. You've heard this. We're a nation of laws, and we believe right in rules and regulations. And this is what makes the world move smoothly. And Carney said, we all knew it was a fraud. We all knew it was a lie. than it was to simply American, you know, unilateralism, American hegemony, you know, dressed up nicely. But we went along with it because we were reaping the benefits of it, but it was a straight up lie. The whole world knows that America is built on a foundation of lies. They just benefit from these lies. And so the nations that benefit continue to play the game. But what's happening now is people aren't benefiting from the lies. And so there's this growing recognition. Sadly, nations like Iran and Russia, who weren't benefiting from the lies, but needed to negotiate with the United States in good faith, came to the table believing the United States might actually be seeking an honest, you know, interaction. And now they both understand. I mean, Iran just said, we're not going to deal with Trump anymore. He's a liar. Not until he's out of office. There's no more negotiations with this administration because they are liars. We can't deal with them. And the Russians are saying similar. The spirit of Alaska is like, because the United States deceived us, lied to us. We can't deal with this. You know, and so Trump is not only being exposed as a liar at home, and as a liar by his friends, but, you know, the people that, you know, we need to talk to create opportunities for peace are also recognizing that we're lying. The American people have known this, but like Carney and the rest of the world, you know, we go along with the lies because we benefit from them. But the moment we sit down and actually reflect, I mean, my God, people, let's just talk about balanced budgets. We get lied to all the time by the government. They just spend and spend and lie and lie, and nothing they say is true. But as long as we, you know, have, you know, the potholes get filled in and we can go to Walmart and buy whatever we want to buy at a reasonable price, we're happy. But no, America, the government of the United States is a government that sadly is have been functioning as nothing but a lie factory for decades now.
I spoke yesterday with a retired Russian major general. 40 years in the Soviet and then Russian army, who's now in the Duma. And he told me point blank that Trump can send, he didn't use this phrase that I'll use, the real estate brokers to us all he wants, and we'll be very courteous to them. We don't take them seriously. We don't take the United States seriously. We're riding this out until somebody replaces him in the White House because we can't trust him.
This is where at. So the American people need to understand this. We're being put on hold for 2 years. The world's moving forward. And this is what the United States needs to understand. You know, this Iran conflict, which we've lost, you know, we're going to be put on hold, put on pause. Trump is going to, you know, flounder around, and eventually he's going to have to withdraw, declaring some sort of victory for the American public to consume. But the rest of the world is moving forward. And by the time we get new leadership, if we can get new leadership, effective leadership, we're going to be in a deficit. The world will move forward 2 years. In 2 years, so much can happen and so much will happen in terms of multipolarity, in terms of international trade agreements, in terms of, you know, what the world's reserve currency looks like, what our economic status is. Let's say we elect a good president. That would be nice. This president is going to be hamstrung from the start because our diplomats are going to be 2 years behind the curve, and right. We're playing catch up the whole time. I mean, this is devastating for the United States. All these MAGA types and all these USA, USA types. My God, what have we become? A nation that, you know, used to be about principles, values, where your word was your bond. And now we literally tolerate the liar in chief who commits fraud on a daily basis, is committing grift and graft and, you know, extortion on a daily basis, deceiving the American public, deceiving everybody, or just doing it in our face, like deliberately manipulating the market so he and his inner circle make billions of dollars in profits. We're pretending it's okay. Had this been done 3 decades ago, we'd be screaming for their heads on a pike. And today we just let it go because sadly it's become the norm.
Wow. Can you rationally be more massive in your use of force at the end of a military operation than you were at the outset?
Sure. I mean, you know, let's look at World War II. You know, right. We started World War II with an army that had, antiquated tanks. We had undeveloped doctrine. We finished it with, 12.5 million men in arms, the best equipment. We had our military industry fully rocking and rolling. We're pumping out bombers and tanks, and we had nuclear weapons. I mean, we were massively stronger than we were. But it took, 4 years to do it, three plus years to do this. Trump, our defense industry is dysfunctional. People need to understand that it doesn't exist. Defense industry does not exist to produce weapons for the American fighting men. Please understand this. It exists to put money in the pockets of shareholders of defense companies. The process that we use to procure weapons is not geared towards, making our military a more lethal system. It's designed to sustain defense industry and make the people involved wealthier. We produce crap weapons, excuse my language, and we produce them over time, which means that while we may have designed something we thought would be good at the time of the design, by the time it gets to production, it's the whatever advantages we have been surpassed by the enemy, who has shorter time frames and is caught up. We don't have superiority anywhere. Scott, we got the F-35. If you knew the truth about the F-35, you'd know that we don't have superiority. We got the F-22. Same thing, guys. If we're so damn good with these aircraft, why did we lose a war? Why did we lose a war? Because we've been lied to the whole time about the operational parameters of these aircraft, how we were using them, how we employed them, what they did. We don't have any data coming out on the maintenance sustainability of these. That's probably highly classified, because the truth is you can't fly these things too often before they break. And then they have to go in for very extensive maintenance. So we're flying the wings off of these airplanes, and they're brand new airplanes. We have to recoat them with their special coating to prevent the radar from seeing, even though the radar sees them all the time. We've been lied to about everything. Nothing we have works the way it was designed to work, and the proof is in the pudding. The Patriot PAC-3, the best damn interceptor missile in the world, we've been told. It's crap. It's garbage. It doesn't shoot anything down. And when it does shoot it down, it's done because they're putting cheap missiles out there, and we hit them with really expensive missiles, and we bankrupt ourselves. We started a war with, the totality of what trillions of dollars of American taxpayer money could bring to us over the course of the past several decades. And we finished the war depleted, and we're not replacing it. The concept that we're more massively powerful today than we were when we started the war is just a straight up lie.
Does Pete Hegseth and does General Kane, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, know what you've just said? And if they don't, should they be fired?
Of course they know what I'm saying.
Maybe if they do, they should be fired.
I'm not privy to the advice that they give the president. There's a snowball's chance in hell that Pete Hegseth is giving good advice to the president, because he's just a demented cheerleader of war. General Kane, I'm going to give I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, meaning that, his job as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is to advise the president on certain realities. And I don't know if he's been slipping slides to the White House that have been warning of this, only to be overridden by Pete Hegseth, who doctors data. So I'm not going to call for Kane's head yet, primarily because, at least according to the press, on two occasions, he told the president, pound sand when the president ordered him to prepare nuclear strike options for Iran, citing the Constitution. So any man that does that gets the benefit of the doubt. Pete Hegseth, on the other hand, he should have been fired a long time ago. This man is just incompetent as the day is long. We lost this war because of him, because we went to war because of him, because when everybody else stood up and said, this is not a good idea, the president turned to his Secretary of War, who said, oh, we got this, baby. We got this. We didn't have anything.
Well, has he, I don't know if you could know this. Does it appear as though he has misled the president on the reduction of arms? Chris, put the full screen up again. Look at how low we are. First of all, the column munition, Tomahawk, JASSM, PrSM, SM-3, SM-6, THAAD, Patriot. This is significant stuff, is it not?
Well, first of all, each one of these costs a whole bunch of money. The SM-3 and SM-6 are just prohibitively expensive. These are the missiles that we use off of our ships. THAAD, horribly expensive. Patriot, ridiculously. I mean, none of these are cheap. we built these weapons because we wanted to create the impression to the world that we could overwhelm you with technology early on in any conflict. The other thing people need to understand is you're looking at a pre-war inventory. That's the totality of the weapons available to the United States. That means if you're in the Pacific and you're the commander of Pacific forces, you have a war plan that's predicated on a certain amount of these precision munitions being available to you in order to sustain the conflict. If you're the commander of U.S. forces in Europe, you know, when Chris Donahue, the four-star general who's just been booted out, made his ridiculous statement about Kaliningrad and how we could destroy Russia's ability to defend itself in Kaliningrad, he was betting on the fact that he had available a specific number of munitions. And so to sit there and consume this amount of munitions in a losing conflict with Iran, it means that we don't have enough weapons now to fight China against Taiwan, if that ever happened, or Russia in Kaliningrad in the Baltics or the Arctic. I mean, Trump's talking about Greenland, and we're going to move in there aggressively and more massively, and we don't have the weapons to do this. We started a conflict with Iran that we lost because we ran out of the allocated munitions. In order to sustain it, we went ahead and borrowed from the Pacific and the Europeans, and we dropped those stockpiles dangerously low, below that which you, any reasonable man could say, Mr. President, we can accomplish the mission you have assigned us. We are below that right now. So we know, it's a statement of fact, if we went to war against Russia today, we would run out of ammunition rapidly, which is why, and the same thing with China, which is why the president has ordered a new nuclear posture review. And this is the most dangerous thing, because now what we're saying is, well, because we have no more conventional ammunition, if we do go to war with Russia and China, early on, we're going to have a liberal use of tactical nuclear weapons to make up for the deficit of conventional weapons. These people are insane, because the moment we use one nuclear weapon, they're all going to be used and we all die. So the United States is setting not just our nation up, but the world up for collective suicide because Pete Hegseth lied to the president about the availability of ammunition.
Talk to me about the availability of oil. The average national price for a gallon of gasoline hit $4.01 this morning, according to AAA, higher than it has been at this point in the summer at any time. Obviously, a very ominous sign for Republicans in November. The national average price for a gallon of gas has never surpassed $4 after August 10, which is the tail end of the summer when gas prices are typically starting to come down. So we're running out of ammo and we're running out of oil because of Donald Trump listening to Benjamin Netanyahu and David Barnea. Agreed?
100%. You know, global energy security is a complicated thing. I think Americans are misled by, you know, concepts of we're energy self-sufficient, we're told. We're energy self-sufficient. And then they cite all the different, you know, kinds of oil that we pump out of the ground. They cite, you know, Canadian, the oil sands that could come down if we just built the pipelines and things of that nature. But what they don't understand is that oil does not equate to gasoline. It just doesn't, ladies and gentlemen. Specific kinds of oil equate to gasoline. Our refineries that are, you know, in existence in the Gulf Coast were built primarily to service Venezuelan crude. And now we, thanks to our sanctions, we crippled Venezuelan oil production. Even though Trump brags about how we have Venezuela in the bag, the bottom line is it's going to take a long time for Venezuela to get its oil wells up and pumping oil out to feed this thing. So we have to look for oil abroad. We used to buy it, believe it or not, from Russia because there's a grade of crude from the Urals, the Ural Mountains, that roughly mimics the crude oil that came out of Venezuela in terms of sulfur content, et cetera, so that you don't have to change the setup of the refinery. The change to set up a refinery is a big deal. You can't just do it. All right, what kind of oil we got today, guys? Ah, okay, click, 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 let's go. No, massive rebuilds. It costs hundreds of millions of dollars, not billions of dollars. You can't do it. So you build the refinery, then you bring in the specific grade that you're doing to get the specific products you want. We, thanks to this conflict, have screwed up the world's, you know, supply of oil. It's always been on a razor's edge. You know, when you're dealing with something like oil, you don't want to have too much oil out there we saw what happened during the pandemic when, the demand for oil dropped and suddenly people, it used to be that oil, used to be worth something. If you were holding on to oil, you had to pay. Owning oil became a negative to your account. It cost money to store, you had to pay people. It reversed. Now that was just short term but it was just because we had too much oil. So the people that do oil energy security, they keep things very balanced. There's very little margin for error. You have nations like the United States and others who have strategic reserves that can be drawn upon in case of a hiccup in the system, a natural disaster, a limited war. But never before has the market been subjected to total denial of 25% of the world's energy, gas, oil, and related byproducts. I mean, ammonia that comes from the gas, the sulfur that comes from oil refinery in the Gulf region is used to create, fertilizer that feeds the world. So it's not just that there's 25% less oil and 25% less natural gas. There's 25% less fertilizer. And now the world's agriculture is saying we need fertilizer. There is no fertilizer. Crops are going to fail. This is a total collapse. And right now, we're going to have to buy gasoline and diesel from the open market. Or because, believe it or not, the national oil companies, the multinational oil companies that reside here in America and always fly that American flag, ladies and gentlemen, they don't care about you. Not at all. Not 1 cent. They care about profits. And right now, they're making profits. So as the demand for gasoline and oil goes up around the world, they have a choice. They're not going to subsidize it for you. They're not going to sit there and go, well, we're just going to give it to you for $4 a barrel. No, if it's going up around the world, it's going up here. Spot market, speculation. And you're going to pay because of this. This is a disaster for the economy. The rebound that will take place. I mean, high diesel prices. I mean, truckers stop delivering goods. I mean, stuff packs up in a port doesn't get the market, which means when you go to Walmart, you don't get the made in China stuff that you always got at affordable prices, or you're not getting the made in California produce that was shipped here fresh so you can buy it. It's disruptive of everything. And once the system starts to collapse, it doesn't recover. It's not just like, oh, open up the Strait of Hormuz and everything will be great. We are falling behind the power curve and systems are starting to fail. People are starting to make adjustments. So even if the Strait of Hormuz opens up, first of all, it's going to take a long time for it to catch up. And when it finally catches up, the infrastructure that was supposed to be there isn't going to be fully functional anymore. This is creating a dysfunctional world. And you know who's going to be the most dysfunctional in it? Us, America.
Do our, I'm going to throw in a word, you tell me if I'm wrong to throw this word in, former allies in the Gulf recognize the disaster that we have wrought? Have we abandoned Kuwait, for example?
Of course they recognize it. They're fighting for their survival right now. People need to understand that Kuwait was about two or three concerted Iranian missile strikes away from extinction. The Iranians had destroyed a lot of Kuwait's energy production capacity. And I'm not talking about oil well pumping. They proved they could take that. I'm talking about actually creating energy, the thermal plants that produce energy. Why is energy important? Because it drives everything, like the electricity that powers the air conditioning in the buildings in a nation where the average temperature in summertime is about 120 degrees. You can't live without air conditioning. Water, they started hitting desalinization plants, and the Kuwaitis were down to their final desalinization plants, had to be talking about how they're going to source water from other nations, but that's not sustainable in the long run. So one or two or three more missile attacks by the Iranians hitting the right targets, and Kuwait shuts down as a nation, and they knew this. Bahrain knew it. The United Arab Emirates knew that. Saudi Arabia is waking up to this reality. Qatar is going, my goodness, what's happening? They all understand what happened here. They were deceived by the United States. And it was self-deception on their part, to be honest, because any rational actor would know that the United States was not a reliable partner. But as I said about the American people, you tolerate the lies so long as you're making money. And as long as the United States was there pretending to be their protectors, the energy was flowing, they were making money, and all these Gulf Arab states, they're not governed, with few exceptions. They're not governed by people who care about their people. They're governed by the most corrupt tribal elites that were picked by the British back in the colonial times to run these fiefdoms as British neocolonial experiments. And then America took over. And so these nations, these leaders exist for our benefit in a quasi-colonial relationship. And now they've been caught out. And so they fear not only for the fact that they're going to lose their, the ability to survive as a nation, but what they fear most, because they don't care about the nation, that they're going to lose their ability to survive, as a power elite. These are some of the most corrupt people you've ever met. They're not good people. The hypocrisy is beyond belief. And when they lose the ability to generate the money to pay for their excessive, corrupt, perverted lifestyles, their heads are going to roll. And so they've all woken up. This is existential for them. This is, we aren't going to be able to jump on our 747s and fly to London and party like, it's 1999 for 2 weeks, and then come back and build a mosque and beg for forgiveness lifestyle. So they know this. So they're now starting to say, how do we adapt to this new reality? And, you see things like the Turkish, Saudi, Pakistani, Middle East NATO that they talk about. I don't take it serious at this point. But you see them struggling to say, how do we get out of this? None of them want to acknowledge that Iran is now, a new regional superpower, a new reality, but they're all going to have to acknowledge that. The other thing they're not fully embracing yet is what it means when America leaves, and America will leave. I mean, I just want to say we lost. We don't have any cards. None. The steel wall is unsustainable. The aircraft carrier that's out there backing it up, those boys have been out, and boys and girls now, have been out in the sea longer than they were supposed to be. They're having family problems at home. They're having operational problems on the ship. They don't want to be there. Morale is plummeting, and nobody wants to be part of a losing war. And I think everybody right now in the U.S. military understands we got beat.
CNBC reports, I inadvertently attributed this to the New York Times earlier today, that insiders in the White House reveal that Trump is bored with the war. Bored with it. It's not going to let him go. He may want to let it go. It's not going to let him go. What else does he have, Scotty?
Well, bored with the war. First of all, we got to understand that how did Donald Trump, pursue this war? Pete Hegseth and Mike Radcliffe created what I'll call war porn for him. They produced videos every morning that Donald Trump could look at that showed things blowing up. And they, they would sit there and tell him, this is massive use of firepower, unbeatable. The Iranians have never had anything like this hit them before. And you see Donald Trump tweeting out the same thing. Well, we're not producing war porn anymore. And the man who became addicted to war porn doesn't have war porn. Instead, what he's getting is, real news. Mr. President, we can't do what you say. Mr. President, we lack the capacity. Mr. President, things are falling apart. Mr. President. And he's like, I don't want to hear this, because Donald Trump's not a president. He's a cult leader. This is a cult of personality, all about promoting the brand of Donald J. Trump. It's not about a man who gives a damn about his country. Donald Trump doesn't care about America. He doesn't care about the American people. He only cares about Donald Trump. This war was supposed to be his ability to say, I'm a wartime leader. Instead, he got his ass kicked. The first American president to actually lose a war, not walk away from a war, but lose a war. We lost. We got beat. We were defeated because of Donald Trump. And now he's bored. He's bored of it. So I think you're going to see this man, because he's a liar. He's just a straight up liar. And he can lie to himself as well as he lies to the American people. And you already see the way he's quibbling about the steel wall. I think he's going to declare victory. This is what some people are saying, that he's going to just say, yeah, we won. We control the Strait of Hormuz. War's over. Goodbye. We're going home. Oh, by the way, since peace is breaking out all over, we don't need American troops in there. And they're ungrateful anyways, those ungrateful people. And we're going to come home and America first. And, we're good. I made America great again. And, vote for me in November. This is the kind of crap we're going to be getting. Hopefully the American people see through this nonsense and realize that this is the single worst president we have ever had in our history. And we've had some bad ones.
My friend, the former governor of New Jersey, I don't agree with him on many things, but this is a very interesting observation he made. Donald Trump's greatest fear is to be compared to the predecessor he least respected, Jimmy Carter. Watch this.
The real problem here is it was an adventure without a plan. And now, I've struck this week when the Iranians put out their list of demands. to reopen the strait, reparations, et cetera. What struck me was that Donald Trump is about to become what he never, ever wanted to be, Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
He is being held hostage by Iran. They are holding the Strait of Hormuz hostage. As a result, they're holding the world economy hostage. Mm-hmm. And it's focused at Donald Trump. And I know from talking to him over the last 24 years, the one person he would never want to
Jimmy
be Carter.
Jimmy Carter. I talked to him about Jimmy Carter,
right?
too.
And, so, and here we are. And it was all voluntary.
Jimmy Carter is 400 times the man that Donald Trump ever was. You know, yeah, he had a rough presidency, but you know, people, you know, I'm a Reagan guy. I was a Ronald Reagan guy from the moment I could vote onwards. But you know, because I'm also, you know, inquisitive, you know, you look into Reagan's military buildup, and then you realize Jimmy Carter did that. Jimmy Carter's the guy that gave us the B-1 bomber. Jimmy Carter gave us the MX missile. Jimmy Carter gave us all these programs. Ronald Reagan just came and took credit for it. But Jimmy Carter started all that. You know, Jimmy Carter, you know, took a hard line. When we talk about what we're doing in the Persian Gulf, whether you agree with or disagree, it's a Carter doctrine of, you know, the rapid deployment force was created by Jimmy Carter, to, you know, to make sure America could have control over the Persian Gulf. Donald Trump should pray that he's compared to Jimmy Carter, not only as Jimmy Carter as a president, because the more we reflect on it, the more we realize that Jimmy Carter, you know, just had a string of bad luck. Unlike Donald Trump, who made his own bad luck because it's just stupid decisions. But, you know, Donald Trump should pray that he's remembered like Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter is one of the greatest ex-presidents we ever had. The things he did for society, for the world, for the American people, Habitat for Humanity. This is a man who truly had compassion for his fellow humans, a man who believed in America and worked for America. Donald Trump won't be remembered for this. In fact, if this things keep going the way they are, Donald Trump's going to be erased from the pages of history because we'll be so embarrassed that we ever voted for this fat, obese, orange-faced fool that we're just going to want to forget about it. Hopefully he leaves as the criminal that he is and that he'll be recorded as a criminal president. I'd like to see not only him continue to be impeached, but hopefully we can get sufficient seats in the Senate to convict this war criminal in chief. Jimmy Carter was a hell of a man, a hell of a human being, and not a bad commander in chief. Donald Trump, not even close.